And Bob Fletcher with us as we talk about Incoming, the only expose of the incoming of Nibiru. That's Planet X. We'll be back with Bob in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bob Fletcher with us. So, Bob, let's tie this together again. So you're seeing all these pieces that something big is happening, that these elitists are concerned about something much more than just some earthbound tragedy. How did you piece it together into Planet X?
Well, again, I continued looking into putting it all together. All the money's gone, and then I find out we've got over 100 of these underground facilities just in the United States. So I started snooping a little bit farther outside of that, and I realized something that I had missed, and an awful lot of people maybe also had missed it too, and that is that we jointly had gotten together with a couple of countries a few years ago, and we created a giant seed vault in Denmark, where, of course, the lead government on this thing. And this is multi-billions of seeds on the and into the side of a frozen mountain in outside of Denmark. And this is carrying and holding all of the seeds necessary to totally replant the earth when, and in fact, something externally would come in and cause the complete wipeout of all vegetation, mm-hmm. or 90% of the vegetation of the world. And this is a giant thing. It's called the Seed Vault. It's in Norway. It can be, you can just look that up. You can find information on that. And that was a cooperative thing. So then I started looking, snooping beyond that, trying to find, I was trying to look for some logical reason outside of the idea of the Planet X. Maybe there's something else that I was missing, okay? And I started, again, just expanding my inquiries and asking people in Washington what they knew or what they didn't know or what was going on. And somebody said, well, have you looked into China? And I hadn't at that time. And they said, well, do you know about the ghost cities in China? And I said, no. This is like 2 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
I said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And, of course, you already know about that.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
That's a real story.
That is where the Chinese had gone over the last 15 years, actually, goes back that far. And they're building these entire cities the size of New York City in terms of total capacity. It would be exactly if you plopped New York City in the middle of outside of Beijing someplace. They've done as many as 10 or 15 of these cities. They're still working on them. They are empty. There is no one at all.
Nobody there.
In these cities.
Nobody on the roads. Nobody in the buildings. Nowhere.
Nowhere. And these are phenomenal. They are in Mongolia, and they are up on the hillsides, the mountainsides, in different areas throughout China. They even assisted and went into South America and built one or two in a few locations in South America, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know how that came about, but that's a reality. And to add to it now, I did some snooping, and I found out at the very highest levels that several years ago, China did a large study, an in-depth study on what parts of their nation would rise up, would change elevation up or down in the case of some kind of a celestial external effect. In other words, we're talking movement of the crust of the land throughout China. And they had done that. And so I said, aha, okay. So I said, well, if China's doing crazy things like this, and of course we don't know, or what I do know is they also had like 3,000 tunnels, some of which are brand new, and of course many that go back several generations, actually 1,000 years, enough tunnel systems for multi-thousands to live in, because they had actually created those many, many years ago. But they've gone back in now and modernized a huge number of these and turned them into the equivalent of the 100 and whatever that we have in the United States, livable. They even have as many, by the way, as a sidebar, they have ships and airplanes already in storage in theirs. I have pictures of all this. And that's all included in the DVD. I have motion pictures also, as a matter of fact, of some of the underground facilities here in America.
Let me ask you this, Bob, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go finish up.
I was going to say, just to finish this direction, I looked into Russia to find out what was going on. And lo and behold, here in 2010, the Russians came right out publicly and said, we are going to finish and we're going to have a minimum of 5,000 underground facilities created and finished by 2013 or 14. So the Russians now have done the same thing. All right. So here we have all of the major nations of the world are involved with underground secreted facilities. All right. There are some of them set up, like here in the United States, for huge numbers of people. There's one in China that will, and in Russia, two of them that will hold multi-thousands of people. I'm talking like 20, 30,000 underground. And again, I have, you know, we have all of this in the new DVD. But so it's not just the United States. So it's not just some kind of a thing where the U.S. is worried about China doing something with, you know, missiles or Russians or doing something like that. This is a universal hide underground program. And, of course, the next thing we had that I had to look into at that point was to get a good scientific handle on this. You know, what were the sciences? What has been admitted? And of course, you go, and once you get into it, the first thing that comes up is, of course, Dr. Sitchin, who I know.
Just going to ask you that. Yep.
Yeah. And of course, his primary thing back in the 60s, where he started evaluating and transcribing, there's like 25,000 of these Sumerian clay tablets. And there's profuse description of Nibiru, and of course there's a lot of other things relative to the ET connections and what have you, but just strictly on the Sumerian clay tablets, discussing and talking about Nibiru is all very, it's flagrant throughout the entire, all of those tablets.
A 3,600 year elliptical orbit, Bob.
Right. 3,000, all right, and this is another interesting point. This is a 3,600-year orbit that this planet, which is said to be calculated to be 5 to 7 times the size of Earth in diameter. It has supposedly 5 moons running around it, the same as ours, our situation here with Earth and the moon, and it is traveling in this huge elliptical orbit. Now, a lot of people, real early, the people that, you know, knew nothing about it, and I include myself, particularly 5 years ago, knew nothing or very little about it. You know, my thought was, gee, 3,600 years, that sounds almost goofy, you know. But then it was immediately brought to my attention that, you know, we always watch the 75-year Halley's Comet.
Yeah.
That's 75
76
years.
76 just, years, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is, and give it 70, give or take a year or so. So we have Halley's Comet. We know that comes around 75 years, all right? And then a couple of years ago was this surprising discovery of a thing called the Hale-Bopp Comet. All right. Now, the Hale-Bopp Comet, which they discovered it, and they said, oh, it'll be here in about 2 or 3 years. They found it, saw it, and sure enough, it came in, and just like Halley's Comet, it zipped around the sun and zipped back out again, and they did all of their studies on it, and they said, guess what? It's 4,200 years. It will be back. So for the people that immediately just said, oh, 3,600 years for an orbit, that's stupid. Well, that's wrong. So 4,200 years for the Hale-Bopp comet to come zipping around again. And now you have to remember, there's a big difference between a comet, which is like frozen dust and miscellaneous particles for the most part, flying around and dragging its tail of what really is just a little junk behind it. That's like no big thing compared to the potential of a planet that is probably mostly iron. There's iron oxide apparently flying off of the edges of this thing and dragging along with it its tail, which is not going to be frozen little pieces of dust. And I have to make this point. For example, in Halley's Comet, I'm pretty sure I have this off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure this is going to be accurate or close. Halley's Comet, the tail that it drags around every 75 years when it comes in within sight of Earth, anyhow, it's 24 million miles long.
Wow.
That's the tail. Yeah. That's the tail on the
Halley's
Comet.
That's amazing.
Okay. Now, when you say, all right, well, gee, that's amazing, and it is. What we're going to have when this Planet X Nibiru comes between us and the sun and will eclipse the sun, when it comes around, it may have, well, let's just say it only has two times as much junk behind it. All right? Now we're talking 50 million miles of crap behind this thing. All right? And it's not going to be little frozen pieces of dust. These are going to be meteors of a variety of sizes. Now, we saw what one of them did to Russia, just breaking the sound barrier and blew 5,000 windows
yep.
out of the building.
Injured 1,400 people.
Injured 1,400 people. All right? And it was like the basketball, for crying out loud, compared to what we're talking about. Now, that's scary stuff when we're talking about this. And again, this is one of the things that I hope that I turned out to be the biggest fool on Earth, along with a few thousand others of us that are following this thing. I hope we are all wrong, because if I'm not wrong, we will see what took place in biblical times. We will see Noah's floods again on the face of the earth, and we will see meteor showers. Now, here's the deal. If, again, I have to do this totally, if the calculations are as accurate or even close to being accurate, when this thing comes by, it will cause a solar eclipse that will be several hours. The last one had been calculated back during biblical times by the Chinese ancient astronomers and other ancient writings, not only Dr. Sitchin's writings, but the writings of so many other ancient civilizations that recorded this thing, that it was a three-hour solar eclipse, that it will take the Earth. What will happen is and if you can kind of picture this, you have a basketball, and that's the sun. And in comes this planet dragging God knows how long a tail of junk coming through behind it. It's going to come through. It will cause a solar eclipse, and it will then pass on behind the sun, like the other comets mm-hmm. have done, and the other planets, like we do. It'll go around behind the sun and then back out. All right? Now, we will pass through it after its first disappearance behind the sun. We will go through the tail. Its calculations are that it will take about 1 hour of our time to pass for the Earth to pass through this meteor shower. The biblical reports of the same event when it took place indicated just in Jerusalem, outside of Jerusalem, 187,000 soldiers were killed by strictly the falling meteors,
which they thought was divine intervention, right?
Right, and it was the tail that the Earth went through. Now, what will happen is we will go on around the Earth on our standard orbit. By that time, the Planet X will be on its way, had completed its cycle around the sun. It will be going back out to Never Never Land for another 3,000 years before it comes back. And the on its 1,800, whatever it would be, my 18,000 or 1,800 travel going back out, and then starts back in, a total of 3,600. Anyhow, it will have already gone through, and Earth will then go around, and it will smack through the tail a second time from the when it's going back out. So we'll hit it two times at least. Now, the estimate, the potential calculation is that that will happen three times before the tail itself has dissipated. And it see, and it relates to how long that darn thing is. All right? So, if again, if it's 24 million miles, which is what the Halley's Comet is, if it's 24 million, that's going to be bad news because that's going to take a while. If it's five times that, I have no idea how many times we potentially could go through it. Now, the good news and the bad news on that side of this, the calculations, for us to go through this thing, the full breadth of the tail of this, go through it two times, it will have to be on or very close to our plane, the flat plane that all of the planets are on now, the ecliptic, it's called. If it's 20, 30, 10, 15 degrees south of it or on an angle of that much off, then we will not necessarily have that much time traveling through the tail, if that makes sense. It's a little hard without doing it with pictures. But the bottom line is, the worst case situation, if it's really close to being flat with our plane, when it goes around, we'll go through it one time, through it a second time, and through it potentially a third, and then a fourth
time. That's not good. Jeez.
No. And the truth is, of course, just one time through it can really be a disastrous situation, depending on the multitude of and the size of this junk that's going to go through.
Bob, could this have been the Mayan calendar date of December 21st, 2012? They were just early?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about it. And that came to my mind when I got into studying this thing, because they were... You know, they were phenomenal. Their accuracy on this stuff, in terms of all of everything that was astronomical, and the sky studies, they were right on with things. And for them to have missed, now I'm going to make a point because it's interesting you brought that up. The calculations and going back on all of the old Tibetan writings of these characters up there on the hills in Tibet, the Chinese historians and astronomers, who, by the way, had to really be smart back in the old days when they wrote this stuff down, because if they were wrong, the emperor had their heads cut off.
Oh, jeez.
They weren't making things up. If they avoid making up or blundering, they didn't do that because they didn't get fired. They got cut into small pieces. So, anyhow, when you go back over their paperwork, it appears that the two times that this has somewhat been written down, let's say, and recorded, and the last time it was recorded pretty well in terms of description and time and date and direction and all of those things. The first, and this is something everybody asks also, when will we see this?
Now, hold on, Bob. We'll answer that question with you when we come back. Well, time permitting, this last half hour, we'll take some of your phone calls with our special guest, Bob Fletcher. We're going to talk with him more about when might Nibiru come through here. By the way, next hour, we go live to the United Kingdom. Linda Davies joins us as we talk about hostage kidnapped on the high seas, the true story of my captivity in Iran. And welcome back to Coast. So the big question, Mr. Fletcher, when might Nibiru come rolling by?
Okay, and it was interesting because you bring up the idea of could the Mayans calendar, when they said December 21, 2012, was going to be the termination date, you brought that up. And what's interesting is that all the mathematics and the previous logging in of this thing appears that we will first see it visually in the sky as a star, a new star. Obviously, everybody's going to say, ooh, what is that? And it will progressively, obviously, get bigger and bigger as it approaches circling around the sun. That's supposed to take place in December. Now, it can be potentially December of this year or the next 2 or 3 years. Relative, there's a lot of conflict of analysis of dates and times and calendar changes and all of those different things. So there's kind of a conflict on that. But the first visible sighting has been agreed that it probably will be seen out there headed in December. So that's interesting because the Mayans said December 21. They may have missed by 4 or 5 years. And, of course, it could be 6 or 7, so you could actually have it starting to be visible this December or next December, what have you. The idea, again, relative to all the scriptures and things that have been written on this, the previous journey was that it would be seen in December, and then by February, March, and April, the time of Passover, this relates, of course, to a lot of the biblical writings on this thing, that February, March, April, possibly March and April, would be when it would be closest and going around the sun and causing all of the problems that we will see if this thing and when this thing hits. But that's interesting because the December of the Mayan calendar termination comes up as being likely the first time it will be visible in the skies for most of us.
Will they tell us about this, though, Bob? Will the astronomers say, hey, something's out there, it's coming?
No. And the president will not either. I know you had, I think you've interviewed a couple other people on the same subject or thereabout. Here's the problem. I think, which really bothers me now, the biggest deal right now, today, in October of this year, is all of a sudden Ebola, which is this world-threatening situation. What I put very clearly in my DVD that we're talking about, the new report on Nibiru, is that the president will utilize, and he must do this now, there's no way they're ever going to formally tell us about this thing, least of all before martial law is already in. Now, my prediction on this thing, after doing all the nothing hokey or anything, just plain old analysis of knowing these guys and how they work on this stuff, is that they will utilize either a giant synthetic terrorist event, which is what I always thought it would be. It would be a terrorist event, or an infection, totally out of control epidemic.
Like Ebola?
Like Ebola. I put that very specifically, as a matter of fact, in the report, that it would be either a terrorist event, 2 or 3 places, maybe even a possibility of Russian conflict. I had thought about that when things started generating back a while ago, when we, with those guys invading wherever the hell they wanted to. I thought it would either be that, or now all of a sudden it's kind of a little chill down my spine because I said, or it would be so, something like the Ebola epidemic. And now, all of a sudden, within a period of 3 weeks, we have this whole new attitude towards it.
Sure
people
do.
Are afraid to even get on airplanes. Now, here's what's going to happen. Something is going to cause it to where the president is going to come forward and say, that my fellow Americans, I hate to tell you this, and he's going to declare a national emergency, and martial law will be in effect. It could very well be the Ebola problem, or it could be something else.
Or something
else. But it scares me, scares me now because it's all of a sudden this is up. Because we're looking October, November, December. We got 3 months, so to speak, before the possibility of this thing being seen way out there in Never Never Land. There's no way, if you think about this, even if we had a good, honest president, which I don't remember when that was, but if we had a guy that was absolutely straight up and down, they cannot come out and say to the general public, we have this thing coming in that's going to possibly kill 70% of every living thing on the planet. There's no way that can ever really be admitted at all. It just is not going to happen. They are going to put martial law into effect before Nibiru hits the fan.
To get ready. Let's take some calls here for you, Bob, in the time we have left as they line up here for you. Let's go to Mike in Connecticut, first of all. Mike, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, Mike.
This stuff is just it's happening all around us, and a lot of people don't pay attention. I used to work at an airport years ago, and we had a great number of empty buses, unmarked, coming in to pick up hundreds of Marines. I'm like, I'm asking myself, what are the Marines doing in New England? Number one, hundreds of them. And 2 or 3 weeks later, we'd have the same thing happen again. And now you've got FEMA buying up all these weapons, and you've got NOAA, of all organizations, buying up all the non-perishable goods. I just like to make that comment, and I like to think, see what your guest thinks about this.
Well, and he is correct, Bob. I mean, government is buying a lot of things, ammunition, body bags, food, you name it.
That's correct. All of that is also in the new report. I cover all of the amount of weapons, who bought them, where it is, how they're hiding them under the variety of different bureaucratic titles. They're spending billions to buy up millions of weapons. They have militarized, we know, the police forces all over the United States with a little contractual thing that says they'll almost give them troop carriers and bazookas for free if the local police will guarantee to jump on board when they're called to. This is going to be the army that's going to protect the bad guys down underground when the stuff hits the fan, and that's the purpose for all of those weapons that we're talking about. So go ahead. If you want to have another, let's catch another caller. That'd be great.
You got it. Next up, we got Jeff in Culver City, California. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George and Mr. Fletcher. Yes, you mentioned earlier that there was some type of particle light beam that you were affected by or was acquainted with. And I just wondered just what exactly this mysterious light beam that seems capable of elevating humans upwards into whatever crafts are operating the light. You know, I once remembered talking to an elderly Vietnamese gentleman in the early 1970s who told me of a gigantic-looking, quote-unquote, space vehicle that was elongated and shaped like a caterpillar or a centipede. On both of the left and right sides of this craft were huge suction cups that emitted beams of white light, which elevated up children from his village. He said that he had no idea why the children were being selected for abduction, but they were. You know, and people in the village were awestruck and terrified and assumed it was the U.S. government behind this, you know, since the Vietnam War was going on. So I just want to know, Mr. Fletcher, do you believe that these beams of light can actually uplift or elevate a full-bodied human being, you know, whether a child or an adult? And what are your views on sleep paralysis and night seizures? And I want to know your, you know, comments on that.
Okay. All right. Well, to answer your question, first off, those that you're talking about sounds more like a UFO type of a situation, and I do not throw any cold water on any of those reports because if we weren't there, we can't argue them too much. The ones I'm talking about are United States Army weapons. They're a laser and microwave type weapons coming off of some of old Nikola Tesla's original work. And then, of course, the big one, which I'm positive they have totally completed at this time, is a particle beam, which will literally just about vaporize any solid mass. And that's a whole separate thing. What you're talking about sounds like UFOs, and I'm not going to get into that today, tonight, but I would say one thing, if somebody talks about it, don't close your ears to that stuff.
No,
I don't know anything about being levitated.
Take another call or two. Let's go to our first-time caller, Mark, in the state of Washington. Mark, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George, Bob, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Well, last night I had a sighting of three red objects in the sky over U.S. Naval Subbase Bangor in Washington. Now, I remember back in a later show you had, there was a female that was on your show that said that she was she was witness to underground building around Subbase Bangor. And probably, I don't know, maybe a half hour later, I saw what appeared over in the sky, what appeared to be, looked like a particle beam weapon shooting at this smaller object that just darted off away. And, you know, with a third blood moon coming up this Wednesday, kind of ties in there somehow. I would like to get your thoughts on that.
The blue moon rolling in on Wednesday morning.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, though. I've been to Bangor and on board a ship when we Bangor is interesting right up here in Washington State. That's one of the largest offloading weapons location. It's an inland waterways deal where you come in, and I was on board my ship that I was in when I was in the service. We went in to offload our entire munitions off the ship, and we go into this inland waterways area, and to my surprise, we were ordered to stop, and when we stopped, a submarine came right up in the inland waterway and greeted us and then led us on into the offloading, which then was done where railroad cars would, with huge cranes, would offload the weapons from the ships and put them on to railroad cars and go inside the side of Granite Mountains in Bangor there. And it's a huge, gigantic, very, very important offload weapons location and a storage location. I don't know anything about any UFOs like at that area, and I can't imagine that we would be doing any testing there in that particular area of our own because of the munitions would be enough to blow half of Washington State, right? They even do nuclear, by the way, offloads there. So I am familiar with it, and it's an interesting location.
Next up, we'll take time for a couple more calls. Mike in Costa Mesa, California, west of the Rockies. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, longtime listener, George. Excellent topic tonight.
Thank you, Mike.
Is this why the government is not putting any effort into the infrastructure and taking care of the nuclear situation? Because they know we don't have any time to fix it.
Good question.
Our days are numbered.
Yeah, yes. And I don't mean to be interrupting you at all, but the answer to that real quick is absolutely yes. And they changed a whole bunch of things because of this. They totally altered all the space, all of the space and the possible things that we're going to do and all the rest of that. That's been totally postponed and altered and varied. They've been putting things up there they're not telling us about. We may even already have a small colony someplace up there, maybe even on the I'm going to say the moon or even on Mars. They're talking about a new project where it's called Mars One, where theoretically they're talking about 2 years from now putting people up, and they've already got the first 8 people that are going to go up and guarantee to spend the rest of their life. It's a one-way ticket up to Mars. But I found out from what I've done for 30 years that when they're talking about something to get off the ground in a year or two or five, that's probably already 20 years done, been done that far back. So, but to answer your question, yes, it's one of the reasons they've spent very little money on anything, except underground facilities, filling them with all of the survival food and equipment they can. One or two of these facilities are structured so that they can grow food products underground and actually are connected with railroad cars, high-speed railroad levitation cars between different locations to supply foods beyond what they have stored. And they took almost all of it a couple of years ago. You couldn't even get the big companies couldn't even get the storage food because it was being sold all to the government. That's it.
Frightening times ahead, Bob. Frightening indeed. Let's take one more call with Jake in Phoenix before we got to sign off with Bob Fletcher. Jake, go ahead.
Hi, it's great to be on the show.
Good to have you.
Man, so I just got to say, I'm in Phoenix, and I saw an excellent shooting star just now. So
I love it.
Oh, so cool. So I was actually wondering, I was reading online, and they were saying in order for the gravitational, like a planet the size of Nibiru, the gravitational effect would be noticeable up to, like, 10,000 astronomical units. And in order to move that fast in the period of time, like the 3,600 years, it's more than the escape velocity of the center of the Milky Way galaxy. So I guess I was just wondering, if there's an orbit going around, wouldn't it be shot out, like slingshotted out into, like, outside of the galaxy within the period of time they said? So there wouldn't be, like, an orbit, right?
Well, of course, again, like we said earlier, the comets are doing these orbits for these kinds of extraordinary long circular periods of time. We're running out of time, unfortunately. But the outer planets, as a matter of fact, the planets are all heating up already. The chemistry on all of our planets in our system are slowly changing. The chemistry's been altering. The surfaces have been varied. And these are effects already of Nibiru causing the effects. It also has affected the sun in terms of what's going on the surface of the sun. It's affected, of course, I think, we're looking at the glacier melts, and then they keep talking all this baloney about the warming, et cetera, et cetera. There certainly is a warming, but it's going to be an effect already of Nibiru. It absolutely is causing that. And I know, we're running out of time, I wanted to talk a little bit about the space disk, but we're not going to have enough time to do that. But there's a thing called the sky disk that literally was discovered in 1999. It is a bronze disc put together by people in Germany that were doing astronomical observations back 3,000 years ago, like at the Stonehenge, and this particular location that they found in a place called Gossig, Germany. And the sky disc is literally a picture of what took place, and it has been done in bronze and highlighted in gold. And it is took the measurements of the locations of the various stars in the sky at that time when this was written or drawn out. I got to say drawn, more like a draw.
Bobby, the clock's got us. I'm sorry we can't finish that. But your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com.